Shabbat shalom and welcome to United Israel World Union. This is our Sabbath morning scripture study. Thank you so much for joining us. I told the local group that I don't know if I'm ready to teach, but I'm ready to sing. I've been singing Bob Dylan, Ring Them Bells, for a lot of hours now. Didn't sleep much, but I'm excited to be here today. I'm excited for a couple of things. I had a couple of announcements first. Our United Israel World Union Sukkot Camp Meeting, October the 18th through the 20th, you can now register online, and you need to register online. There's no charge to attend. We never charge for people to learn about biblical things, so you're welcome to join us. We encourage you to join us, but we do want you to sign up, and you can do that on our website, unitedisrael.org. You'll see the banner that says United Israel Sukkot Gathering. You click on that, very simple. You go to the page that opens up, or you just sit there and it'll go there automatically. You fill in the information and you click submit. And what that does is it lets us know that you're coming. We can prepare for the number of people that we have and so forth. We encourage you to be here. It's going to be an exciting time. And, you know, we generally have our spring annual meeting in Charlotte at our Universal International headquarters there in Charlotte, North Carolina. And sometimes, because that's in Charlotte, people who live in other places have a difficult time getting all the way to the east. So we're hoping that if we split that up and we do something in the fall here in the south, we can reach a different group. So we're hoping that all of our friends in North Carolina make it. Most of them are. I've already heard from them. And so, but some of you who normally wouldn't make that trip, maybe you can make it to St. Francisville, October the 18th through the 20th. We'll post a program and all, but this is during the biblical festival of Sukkot, during a time in which we are commanded to be joyful. Now, I wish that wasn't just 7 days a year. I think it ought to be 24/7, 365. So be joyful. And one more announcement, and we'll get into today's class. Many of you have noticed the links that I've been posting for the Tabor Nichols tour. And I would encourage those of you who can make that trip to sign up for that soon rather than late. Because after Tabor announced it on his website, he hasn't even sent it to his mailing group yet, but he has a lot of people that follow him. And so we already filled up, I would say, almost a third, if not a third already, with people who've already reached out with a few questions who are on the edge. It's going to push it well over a third, and that tour is February 28th through March the 10th. So if you're planning on making that tour, you need to do that sooner rather than later. So all it takes is your deposit to secure your place on the bus, and so do that if you can. The other thing I'm just going to briefly mention is that I received an email late yesterday evening by a friend of mine who is wheelchair-bound, and he asked the question. He said, "I don't think it's a possibility, but I wanted to know, is your tour accessible to me?" I can tell you that that email kept me up most of the night because the answer to that question was no. So without going into a lot of detail, because I'm pretty emotional about it, it made me think that an entire new tour has to be set up for people who are mobility limited. And so I'm going to do that. I have to do that, and I'm going to do it pretty soon. So stay tuned because there's going to be a lot of opportunity for people who might want to help with that. And so just stay tuned for details on that. I don't know what to call it yet, but I want to be very sensitive. I want to pray about it. I want to think about it, and I want to do a lot of research. So I've already had people that have commented on the Facebook posts that I posted. So at least keep that in your prayers because I know that I have to make Israel, the Israel experience, more accessible. And that includes a lot of different things that I have to think about. But I'll think about that, hopefully, after I teach today's class. We are in a new study series on the tribes. I worked for months and months, unbeknownst to you, laying some necessary groundwork so that when I got into this study, which is going to be rather lengthy and pretty detailed, I wanted to make sure that some essential points were laid down first. Now, I'm ready. And we are in the second of the series, the second class, and I announced last week that this week's class would be on the subject that I've titled Abraham's Seed. Abraham's Seed. And that is what I'm going to teach on today, because it is essential that we begin our study, if you will, at the beginning of the saga, at the beginning of the story. In other words, I have to lay down a foundation. I have to establish a firm foundation at the outset, because we must get this part right. We have to get this right, or everything gets off. If your foundation isn't sure, if your foundation isn't solid and square and plumb, then the rest of everything that you build is going to be off. I think most of us would agree with that. Because this particular topic on the tribes is the basis of the Bible's message and is, in fact, the plan of the ages. So this isn't just some random topic of low importance. When I'm talking about the tribes, I'm talking about the very plan of the ages as it is described in the pages of sacred scripture. There is a great deal of confusion. There is a great deal of confusion on this subject. Confusion that has led to all sorts of theological error. And this series is intended to ensure that that confusion is taken out of the way. In other words, we want to make some things plain. Now, one of the primary points of confusion, one of the things that this leads to, if you will, at least in part, is that it causes this confusion, this lack of information, lack of knowledge, causes people to assume and to come up with various types or forms of what I would call replacement theology. Replacement theology, and I'm going to give you my definition of that. It's where something which does not belong is superimposed on the truth. It's a misdirection. It's a sidestep. It's a detour. So we want to get some things straight so that people are pointed in the right direction in terms of their orientation to the biblical message. So in order to fully grasp what the Hebrew Bible consistently presents through its pages, we have to understand some key points related to Abraham's seed. Now, a lot of you might think, look, you know, I think I've got all this, I think I know all this, and this crowd might, because I'm teaching a group of people who in many cases, in most cases, are teachers yourselves. You've been studying this material for a long time. But I want to begin with the foundation and work forward, because my hope is that these classes will benefit those who come along later as well. Jeremiah talks about, Jehovah speaks in Jeremiah, about setting up waymarks. You know, I think about breadcrumbs. In other words, how will we go back and bring those along who are just coming into this? So these are essential. These are ground bedrock truths that have to be established. Now, these particular key points that I'm going to be covering over the course of this study, not just today, I'll cover some of them today, but throughout the course of this study, I'm going to give you a way to look at things that I'm going to call a biblical perspective. There are a lot of people who have various interpretations and understandings and so forth. I'm interested in what the Bible has to say and in what the Bible means. It's what I want to present. I don't know about other people. I'm sure they intend to do the same. But this is the point that some of these points that I want to cover related to Abraham's seed, which I'll be covering over the series, are conveyed in or by historical narrative and or biblical prophecy. So we're going to be getting into quite a bit. Now, surprisingly, and in a way, tragically, many people who have attached themselves to the Bible and seek to follow the biblical path, these points aren't known. They've missed some of these key points, so we're going to cover them. Now, here are some notes that I jotted down to kind of whet your appetite, if you will, and I'm going to cover some of these today. So think about these key points that I hope to lay out very clearly as I work through this series in regards to Abraham's seed. There is a miraculous birth of a promised child announced by angels. Miraculous birth of a promised child announced by angels. This chosen servant will be shown to suffer as a servant and to be exalted. And it is through this seed of Abraham, of which I am speaking today, that ultimately blessing will come to the entire world, and salvation will reach to the ends of the earth through the seed of Abraham. And so at the outset of today's class, you should know that I'll be talking about a subject from a biblical perspective. I'm calling the seed of Abraham. Some of you think, when I'm talking about this, of the Messiah, and I will say, yes, I am speaking of the anointed, but I'm going to be addressing it from a biblical perspective. And so some of the ideas that have come down through various myths and legends and lores and traditions have taken those departures, the detours, the sidesteps. They've become disoriented, and their belief systems are therefore not on sure ground. So we're here in the study of Abraham's seed to sort of fix that, to repair that, to establish again that firm foundation. Hearken to me, you who chase after righteousness, you who seek Jehovah, look to the rock from which you were hewn, and to the hole of the pit from whence you were dug. Look to Abraham and to Sarah, who bore you. For he was one when I called him, and I blessed him and increased him. These are the words of Jehovah recorded in the book of Yeshayahu, in the book of Isaiah, chapter 51, verses 1 and 2. If you are chasing after righteousness. Now, Isaiah chapter 51 is addressed to a very particular group, and I hope and pray that all of us are in that group, because in verse 7, it says very specifically, addressing the same group, that this group has the Torah written on the heart. This particular group who has the Torah written on their heart are chasers of righteousness, rudfei, chasers of righteousness. You pursue it. I always like to tell people, when I'm learning Hebrew vocabulary, I often associate a picture in my mind with the word, as opposed to using an English word to represent a Hebrew word, because sometimes that's not adequate. When I think of radaf in Hebrew, I think, not only of a chase, a pursuit, but such a pursuit that literally the tongue is hanging out of your mouth. Like you're out of breath. You desire to seek the ways of God so much that you've given everything in the pursuit. This particular passage tells us that if we're talking about this group, if you are one of those who chases righteousness, who seeks after Jehovah, if that's you, then you're to look to Abraham, and that's what we're going to do today. I'm going to work through some text. These are foundational. These are fundamental. I'll make some teaching points along the way, but it is essential, even if you think you know these texts, to go through them with me, because we are on the track of Abraham's seed. I'm reminded in Shir HaShirim, in the Song of Solomon, where it says about a flock, a particular flock. Remember, I told you I've been thinking about Ring Them Bells. This story that's in that song about the lost sheep that are on the mountains. You know, and where would you put this flock? I'm searching for the sheep. We're pursuing the sheep. We're thinking about who are the lost sheep. Begins with Abraham's seed, but in Song of Songs it says, follow in the footsteps or the heel prints of the flock. It's like you're tracking them. But it begins with Abraham's seed. Go with me to Bereshit. Go with me to Genesis chapter 12. Genesis chapter 12, beginning in verse 1. Now Jehovah said unto Avram, Lech Lecha, translated, get out. In Hebrew, literally, it means walk for yourself out of your country, from your kindred, from your father's house, to the land that I will show you, and I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless you, curse them that esteem you lightly, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. This is the call of Abraham, of Avram, as he is called at the beginning, or I should say Avram, as he's called when he's called. Lech Lecha, walk for yourself. And he makes certain promises to Abram. He says, I'm going to make of you a goy gadol, a great nation. He says he's going to bless him and make his name great. And you be a blessing. And not only is Avram to become a goy gadol and to be a blessing, and not only is he to be a blessing, but the blessing of others is tied directly to how they, whether or not they bless Israel. If they bless Avram, they'll be blessed. If they esteem Avram lightly, the opposite, they're cursed. Now, the blessing and the curse are described in various texts, in plenty of texts, throughout the Hebrew Bible, and they behave the same way. A blessing is described in the Tanakh as either chasing you down and overtaking you, and so is a curse. And it's like you have a choice. Everyone on the planet has a choice. And their blessing or their curse is directly associated with how they treat Avram. Now, Avram, later known as Avraham, we'll get to that, is not Jewish. Avram was not Jewish. Never did he become Jewish. And this is an essential point, and I'm not trying to take away. I want my Jewish friends to understand. I'm approaching this from a biblical perspective. This is not to cast aspersions. This is not to say anything that there's anything wrong with being Jewish. I'm just saying that Avram wasn't. Clearly was not. He had never heard of the phrase or the term Jewish. One of the main points that I want to get across in the course of this study is to explain to people and make clear certain definitions, certain terms, certain phrases. And we often assume certain things when we superimpose certain wrong points when we approach the biblical text. A lot of people think that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are Jews. And we'll show that as we work through this that none of them were Jewish. Not one. All right? Just to make the point. Now, if you go to Genesis chapter 14, verse 13, Genesis 14, verse 13, I'm going to show you what Avram was. Avram, if you look at verse 13, and there came one that had escaped and told Avram, Ha-Ivri, Avram, Ha-Ivri. Avram is called Ha-Ivri, which is translated the Hebrew. It's the first use, the first occurrence of this particular word, Ivri, Ivri. It's from a root avar, which means to cross over. In other words, Avram is known in the neighborhood, if you will, as the one who crossed over. He's a sojourner. He is a transplant from another place. He's an outsider. He's not a local. So in the land of Canaan, which he is promised, when he goes there, he is known among the people as Ha-Ivri. Now, there are some who put forward the idea that Ivri is one who descends from Eber in Genesis chapter 10 when it accounts for the nations. I'm not sure where you fall out on that. I tend to think of this term as the one who crossed over. Now, I want you to look with me to the book of Joshua. To the book of Joshua, and I want to go all the way to chapter 24 in Joshua, focusing a little bit more on Joshua. So go to chapter 24, beginning in verse 1. And Joshua gathered all the tribes of Israel to Shechem and called for the elders of Israel and for their heads and for their judges and for their officers, and they presented themselves before God. And Joshua said to all the people, thus says the Lord God of Israel, Jehovah Elohei Yisrael, your fathers, he's addressing Israel, says your fathers dwelt on the other side of the river in old time. And Terah, the father of Abraham, the father of Nahor, and they served other gods. I pointed this out before, but this is plural. It's talking about Abraham and Nahor and Terah. And they lived on the other side of the river. And you know what they did over there? They served other gods. The story of Avram, Ha-Ivri, the Hebrew, is that he crossed over not only geographically, but I believe in a spiritual orientation, he becomes oriented towards the one God. He encounters Jehovah, the God of Israel, later known as the God of Israel, but at the time, he's known as El Shaddai. You'll recall in Exodus chapter 6, verse 2, it says that prior to the period which is described in the book of Shemot, in the book of Exodus, the patriarchs refer to the Creator by the name El Shaddai. El Shaddai. I'm going to get more into that next week in my class on the patriarchal plan. But for the present, I just want to bring up this point that Ha-Ivri, Avram is the one who crossed over. He crosses over geographically, but he also crosses over in a spiritual orientation sense. Now, go with me back to the book of Genesis, Bereshit chapter 13, Genesis chapter 13. We are tracing the promises to this one known as Avram HaIvri, Avram the Hebrew. Genesis chapter 13, beginning in verse 14. And Jehovah said unto Avram, after Lot was separated from him, lift up now your eyes and look from the place where you are, northward and southward and eastward and westward. For all the land which you see, to you will I give it, and to your seed, ad olam, forever. And I will make your seed as the dust of the earth, so that if a man can number the dust of the earth, then shall your seed also be numbered. Arise, walk the land in the length of it and the breadth of it, for I will give it to you, and so forth. So this particular text is where God begins to lay out or further expound on what he said when he told Avram, Lech Lecha, go from everything that you know unto a place that I will show you, and I will make you great and make a great name for you, turn you into a goy gadol, and all of these things. All right. Now, this particular text, he tells him, Avram, your seed will be numerous, plenteous, so much so that no one could count it. Innumerable. This is important. Now look at chapter 15. Work with me. We're just going to work through some text as I build towards some essential points that we need to have straight. Genesis chapter 15, beginning in verse 1. And after these things, the word of Jehovah came to Avram in a vision, saying, fear not, Avram, I am your shield, your reward will be very great. And Avram said, Adonai Yehovah, what will you give me, seeing I go childless? Or as he just told him, I'm going to make your descendants as the sand, the dust of the earth. But Avram's got a fair question. I don't have any kids. There are no descendants. And the steward of my house is Eliezer of Damasek. And Avram said, behold, to me you have given no seed. And one born in my house is my heir. And behold, the word of Jehovah came to him, saying, this shall not be your heir, but he that shall come forth out of your own loins, your bowels, shall be your heir. And he brought him outside and said, look now toward heaven and count the stars, if you be able to number them. And he said to him, so shall your seed be. And he believed in Jehovah, or he trusted Jehovah, and it was counted to him for righteousness. And Jehovah continues and tells him, I brought you out of Ur, and so forth. But I want to make something very clear. At the time of these promises, and Avram makes this argument, this point, this case, you're talking about innumerable seed, and at the present, everything which belongs to me is to pass to one that's not even born of me. Where is the promise, is what he's asking. Both of these passages, Genesis 13, Genesis 15, describe the promised seed of Abraham, or he'll later be called Abraham, Avram, as a specific seed, one which is to come from his insides. Now, Christianity took this idea and pointed it towards a singular figure, that the promise would ultimately belong to, the fulfillment would ultimately be realized through the coming of a Christ or the Messiah. So they begin to think about this, and they begin to interpret text that we're reading in a way that is a departure from the plain reading of the text. I'll give you an example. In Galatians 3, verse 16, it says, "Now the promises were made to Abraham and to his seed." That's exactly what I'm talking about, right? That's this class. All right, but look at the way this goes. It does not say, "and to offsprings," or "and to seeds." This is the point. "Referring to many, but referring to one, and to your offspring, which is Christ." The point Paul is making, according to most people attribute Galatians to Paul, the point that he's making is, I see the text, I see the promise to the seed of Abraham, but in Paul's mind, he seeks to establish that the seed in these texts, the offspring, is singular and not plural, right? So that's the point of Galatians 3. But the promise of seed, as we've seen from the Torah, is that the seed is not referring to a singular coming figure, but to a group, a massive, innumerable host. It says the dust of the earth, the stars of the skies. I want to remind you that when this comes, now Abram, it says he trusted Jehovah and he doesn't have any seed yet. But he tells him, look at the stars, your descendants, your seed, your descendants will be as numerous. If you can count the stars, this is what your seed will be. Avram doesn't think of this in small terms. He believes this vision that he's shown of an innumerable host. Now, look down at verse 13. "And he said to Avram," this is Genesis 15, 13, "know surely," K-N-O-W, "know surely that your seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years, and also that nation whom they shall serve will I judge. And afterward they shall come out with great substance, and they shall go to your fathers in peace, and you shall be buried in a good old age. But in the fourth generation they shall come back here, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full." Now, this particular text is interesting because, again, understand this. I want you now, I'm going to speak to you like God spoke to Avram. I want you to know surely this point. He still doesn't have any seed. And he's told here that your descendants, not only will they be innumerable, but they're going to suffer. They're going to serve, and they're going to suffer. His descendants, the seed of Avram, will become a suffering servant. 24 years after the initial call, 24 years. Remember when Avram leaves Ur of the Chaldees, we're told in Genesis 11 and on into 12 that he is 75 years old. When he's 99, God appears to him again. I think a lot of us could learn some valuable lessons from a real Bible study. How many of you have prayed desperately for something and wondered why the next day it hadn't manifested? How many of you have ever asked God specifically for something and thought after a week or a month or a year or a decade, it's 24 years later. Go with me to Genesis 17. Genesis 17, and I'm going to read quite a few verses here, so bear with me. But it's important to establish verse 1, Genesis 17. When Avram was 99 years old, 24 years after the initial call to Lech Lecha, Jehovah appeared to Avram and said to him, I am El Shaddai, Ani El Shaddai, walk before me and be tamim, be perfect. Now I will make my covenant between me and you and will multiply you exceedingly. And Avram fell on his face, and God talked with him, saying, as for me, behold, my covenant is with thee. You shall be a father of many nations. Neither shall your name any more be called Avram, but your name shall be Avraham. For a father of many nations have I made you, and I will make you exceedingly fruitful, and I will make nations of thee, and kings will come out of thee. I will establish my covenant between me and you and your seed and after you and their generations for an everlasting covenant, livrit olam, an everlasting covenant, to be a God to thee and to thy seed after thee, and I will give to thee and to thy seed after thee the land in which you do sojourn, all the land of Canaan for an everlasting possession, and I will be their God. And God said to Avram, you shall keep my covenant, therefore, you and your seed after you in your generations, in their generations. This is my covenant which you shall keep between me and you and your seed after you. Every man shall be circumcised in their foreskin. He goes on to describe this particular covenant. His point is that God is making very clear to Avram, 24 years after he's called him, he's still not seen the fulfillment of God's promise, but he trusts. Trust. And here he's told more details about the covenant between God, between El Shaddai and Avram, who is now told, your name shall be called Avraham. He's going to make him numerous, father of a mass of nations. Again, more of these promises, right? Very, very fruitful, he tells him. Make you into nations. Kings will come from you. Then he's going to establish this covenant. He's going to give land as an eternal possession to Avram, Avraham and his seed. And then he uses this covenant binding language, and I will be a God to them, and you and your seed shall guard my covenant. This people of Avraham, the seed of Avraham, are to be especially chosen for a very important task. Now, we're told as we follow the narrative through that this will take place through Sarai, whose name is also changed. Her name is changed to Sarah. We're told that God says, I will bless her. She will become nations. Kings of peoples will come from her. They're not getting any younger. Right? We just said, Avraham is now 99 years old. In fact, the story where this is related, ultimately what happens is Avraham laughs when he hears this story. Look at verse 19. Actually, begin in verse 17. Avraham fell on his face and laughed and said in his heart, shall a child be born to him that's 100 years old? Like a lot of people read this story and they think, oh, it's a laughing man. Well, he thought it too. And said, shall a child be born to one that's 100 years old? Shall Sarah, that is 90 years old, give birth? Like he's thinking, even if I could she? Or vice versa. And Avram said to God, oh, that Ishmael might live before you. And God said, Sarah, your wife, shall bear a son to you indeed. and you shall call his name Isaac, and I'll establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant and with his seed after him. So God makes it clear. Oh, you indeed are going to have a son from your own body through your woman Sarah, and it is through this miracle, this miraculous birth, that I will establish my covenant that will ultimately lead, as I'll show, to the salvation of the ends of the earth. It's a miraculous thing. And it gets better. In Genesis 18, a very mysterious visit is recorded. Genesis 18, we have a picture of Israel, of Abraham, sitting in the door of his tent in the heat of the day. He lifts up his eyes and behold, Shlosha Anashim, three men coming towards him in the, imagine, the, if you've ever been in the heat, whether the Israeli desert or anywhere in the hot, and you see the, almost like the mirage, the, but he sees these three come up. And it's in this encounter that Abraham and Sarah are told about the birth of a promised child. It's going to be a miraculous birth, and it's announced by angels. I'm talking about the salvation of the ends of the earth, and the story that leads to it begins with this miraculous birth announced by angels. As Avram goes out to send off the visitors, we find one of the most remarkable texts in all of biblical literature. It's one of my favorites because it's we are privy to the very thoughts of Jehovah in this text. If you look at Genesis 18, beginning in verse 17, and Jehovah said, shall I hide from Abraham that thing which I intend to do, seeing that Abraham shall become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him. So now, this is Abraham and God are together. But this isn't God talking to Abraham. Notice, shall I? It's God saying, shall I tell to Abraham what I'm going to do? Real remarkable. For I know him, verse 19, that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of Jehovah, to do justice and judgment, or mishpat and tzedakah, for Jehovah, so that Jehovah may bring upon Abraham that which he has spoken of him. He's saying, we get a lot in this particular passage. We see that Jehovah has this wonderful relationship with the one he's called out of Ur, 24 years prior. He's already told him to walk before him and be tamim, be perfect in his generation, right? And now he's letting him in on the plan. He knows, you see, that Abraham is going to pass this plan down. And this is essential. The plan has to be passed. It's got to go from generation to generation. Otherwise, it's over. It's over. It's either going to pass or it's not going to work. It's going to be brought about through a miraculous birth. Now look at chapter 21 and verse 12. 21 and verse 12. Now, I'm going to read this in a moment, but I'll tell you that the birth does take place just as it's foretold by Jehovah. God tells him this time of year in the season, sort of in the spring is the implication, I'll come back and you'll have a son. You're going to call him Yitzhak for laughter. And sure enough, Sarah conceives. And some people say, well, that's not a miraculous birth, Ross. You used sort of a, you tricked us into listening to the class. That is a miraculous birth. It's very miraculous. These two who were beyond the age of making this birth is miraculous anyway. But once one passes the time in which this is normal, see, it's not normal for someone in this age bracket to be able to have sex first and then to actually produce a child, right? So all of these miracles come together. The child is born just as promised. And then in chapter 21, verse 12, we're told that there's been strife because of this new child that comes in. There's some contention in the home. And so Sarah says, you've got to cast this other one out. And so look at verse 12. And God said to Abraham, let it not be grievous in your sight because of the lad and because of your bondwoman and all that Sarah has said to you. Hearken to her voice, for in Isaac shall your seed be called. For in Isaac shall your seed be called. Now, we're focusing on the seed of Abraham. We've already been told that the seed of Abraham is going to be as numerous as the dust of the earth and the stars of heaven. But we're tracing this seed, this numerous seed, through a particular descendant. Through a seed which is grown in the womb of Sarah. The plan, as we'll see as we work through the text in chapter 22 of Genesis, the plan is threatened because of what we call the Akedah, the binding of Isaac. Isaac is the son of Abraham. He's not a little bitty boy, as some of the books portray him. He's actually, based on the narrative, he's a grown man. But he is taken by Abraham because God tells him to slaughter him. We're not going to get into the details of the story, but Abraham takes what is called his only son, the one you love. He's told to offer him up. So he takes him, and he's preparing to do this, but he stopped. He stopped. Look at chapter 22 and verse 12. Genesis chapter 22 and verse 12. Abraham, Abraham, and he said, here am I. And he said, lay not thy hand upon the lad, neither do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, seeing thou hast not withheld thy son, thy only son, from me. So he tells him to stop. Now I want you to go down to verse 15. And the angel of Jehovah called to Abraham out of the heaven the second time and said, by myself I've sworn, says Jehovah, because you've done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son, that I will exceedingly bless you, and I will exceedingly multiply your seed as the stars of heaven, and as the sand which is upon the seashore, and your seed shall possess the gate of its enemies, and in your seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because you listened to my voice. I want to make a point because this builds lesson to lesson. He listened to God's voice when he said to sacrifice. But he listened to God's voice when God said, don't sacrifice. If we are going to be obedient, we must recognize as the plan of God unfolds that that same message has echoed through the ages. To sacrifice and to cease. But one must listen. Avram listens. Because of this, promises go forward to the seed of Avraham. In Hebrew, Zerah Avraham. Zerah is seed. Zerah Avraham is mentioned four times in Scripture. I want you to go with me to Psalm 105. Psalm 105. And I want to read a couple of verses from here. In Psalm 105, I want to begin in verse 6. O seed of Avraham, his servant, you children of Jacob, his chosen ones, he is Jehovah our God. His judgments are over all the earth. He's remembered his covenant forever, the word which he commanded to 1,000 generations, which he made with Abraham, his oath to Isaac, and confirmed the same to Jacob for a law, and to Israel for an everlasting covenant, saying, to thee will I give the land of Canaan, the lot of your inheritance, when they were but a few in number, of little account, and sojourners there, when they went from one nation to another, from one kingdom to another people, he suffered no man to do them wrong. He reproved kings for their sake, saying, touch not my Messiah, and do my prophets no harm. Psalm 106 says, for their sake. It's addressed to the seed of Avram, of Avraham, and it says, for their sake. When it says, for their sake, it means for the sake of the seed of Avraham, touch not my anointed ones. The seed of Avraham, which is called the servant, it's called the children of Jacob, it's called his chosen ones, it's called his messiahs, and they're referred to as prophets. And we're talking about the seed of Abraham. You see, there are some that think these promises point to a singular figure, to a sole recipient about which some put forward the idea that everything points to one. But when they were few in number, going from nation to nation, he, for their sakes, said, don't touch my anointed ones. So we're talking, when we talk about, I want you to get this, we're talking about the seed of Abraham. We're talking about a plural group. We're talking about many, many, many innumerable stars of the heaven, dust of the earth. We're talking about a group which is called Messiah. Now go with me to the book of Isaiah. Yeshayahu, Isaiah chapter 41. Isaiah chapter 41 and verse 8. 41 verse 8. You, but you, Israel, are my servant. Yaakov, Jacob, whom I have chosen, the seed of Abraham, my friend. The seed of Abraham, my friend. A couple of points. In Hebrew, the word translated friend is from the root word ahav, which means it's really stronger than friend, unless you understand what it means to be a true friend. And it really is tied to the root word love. So Abraham is called my beloved, my friend, the friend of God, the beloved of God. But here we're told Israel is the servant of Jehovah. Jacob, we're talking about Jacob who is chosen. And who is that? The seed of Abraham, my friend. This, by the way, in 2 Chronicles chapter 20 and verse 7, Abraham's seed is also mentioned, but also in 2 Chronicles 20 and verse 7, it also makes reference to Abraham being a friend of God. Now, the idea that I want to convey as I work through this is that once we orient things right, our theology becomes more sure. So we want to understand terms based on the full counsel of the Word of God, is the way some used to describe it back in my early days of the quest. And that's still true. I don't think you should just look at the first occurrence of a word and assume that it means that definition specifically throughout the text. But we ought to be able to look at the composite. We ought to be able to look at the whole and do complete studies. We ought to be able to ascertain what's it talking about. So when we talk about the seed of Abraham, here in Isaiah 41:8, we know we're talking about Israel, my servant, Jacob, my chosen. We're talking about a group. The seed of Abraham is representing something very important in terms of the definite plan that's to be worked out. There is a plan for the ages according to biblical literature. There is a definite plan that God is working through Abraham's seed. Now, it's important, if that is the case, and it is, that we identify who that seed is to which these scriptures refer. We learned today not only this, but we've covered that the chosen seed would suffer. In fact, the chosen seed will suffer, and we even know what some of this suffering involves. They would be captives. They would be servants of another. They're going to be in bondage. But they're going to become numerous, and they will rise up after the suffering, and will ultimately be great unto the ends of the earth. I'm talking about Abraham's seed. This particular seed of which I speak, don't forget this, is born of a miraculous birth, announced by angels, would suffer, would rise, become numerous, be great to the ends of the earth. Ultimately, blessing will be passed through the seed of Abraham, the promised seed of Abraham, bringing about salvation to the ends of the earth. Now, the details of this plan will be covered as we continue our study of the tribes, as we work through the biblical text, and as we allow the Bible to speak on its own terms, we're going to take a look at this subject material according to the Bible and from a biblical perspective. So I'm going to tell you as I close today, don't miss a single class. These build on each other. In other words, you get them a piece at a time. But I have to establish as I work through. Don't miss a single class. Next week, we're going to continue our study with a class on the patriarchal plan as it passes from generation to generation. So don't miss next week. Shabbat Shalom.